Friday's announcement that Libya would give up its banned weapons program and open up the country to international inspectors was one of two events that sent ripples through international diplomatic circles last week. The other was a speech given by Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon on Thursday. While saying he was committed to the roadmap for peace, Sharon also said that if there was no progress within a few months, he would take unilateral action to disengage from the Palestinians. Joining us by phone to talk about both Libya and the Mideast peace process are Martin Indyk. He is former ambassador to Israel during the Clinton administration and currently director of the Saban Center for Middle East Policy, and Shibli Telhami, Anwar Sadat professor for peace and development at the University of Maryland. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Martin Indyk, let me start with you. You say these weren't the first overtures by Libya to the West. Can you elaborate, please?
Well, in 1998, under British auspices, the Clinton administration, I happened to be the Assistant Secretary of State at that time, I began secret talks with the Libyan intelligence chief and a Libyan diplomat. That was after Gaddafi had agreed to send the two alleged terrorists, one of whom was convicted, to trial in a Scottish court in The Hague. And we opened those negotiations essentially to see if we could get Libya out of the terrorism business. But one of the first things that the Libyans did at that secret discussion was to put on the table their willingness as part of this negotiation to rid Libya of weapons of mass destruction. So, it, in fact, the offer goes back to 1998.
Shibli Telhami, do you think Libya was reacting to threats or incentives?
Well, I think it's certainly both. I think a lot of countries in the Middle East have been nervous by the posture that the Bush administration has undertaken. But it's very clear to me it's mostly incentives. The reality of it is, you know, Libya had come under threats before. In the 1980s, the Reagan administration took a very tough policy, in fact, attacked Libyan soil, and in the process, an adopted daughter of Gaddafi's was killed. And I think if you look in the recent past, most countries in the Middle East that have, in fact, been frightened somewhat by the Iraq war have become much more comfortable in the past few months because they feel the U.S. is, in fact, entrapped in Iraq, that it is not about to enter into new wars, that the U.S. resources are being drained. And so there is no immediate threat. And one can argue that in some ways the Bush administration's approach has somewhat changed, that it is now much more open to considering incentives, perhaps, in fact, as a part of the trouble that is taking place in Iraq. So it works both ways. It makes governments in the region insecure, but the fact that the U.S. Is now having more difficulty in Iraq makes the Bush administration more open to offering incentives.
Mr. Indyk, elaborate a little bit on the role of Britain in all of this.
The British had their own issues with the Libyans over terrorist activities in London, which had killed a British policewoman. But they had much greater interest in trying to resolve this through diplomacy. We, at the time, and right up until now, have been applying sanctions to Libya. Libya, of course, was on our terrorism list. And the British sought to try to discover whether the Libyans were in fact serious about resolving these issues through diplomatic means, had some success in resolving their own problems with Libya, and therefore sought to encourage us to engage in that effort as well. Our first condition was the surrender to trial of the terrorists for responsible for Pan Am 103. When they fulfilled that, we then opened negotiations and discovered that the Libyans, Gaddafi himself, seemed to be very interested to comply with whatever conditions we put on the table. The first were that he rid Libya of all the terrorists that he was hosting in camps at that time, and he did that. Then we went on to insist on compensation for the families of those victims of Pan Am 103. That took longer to work out and was not completed until this Bush administration. And I think Shibli is right that in this regard, despite what was going on with Iraq, the Bush administration continued those negotiations which were begun by the Clinton administration and continued a very different policy than was pursued in the case of Saddam Hussein. In this case, we had introduced the notion of graduating a rogue regime from the rogue list if Gaddafi was prepared to fulfill the requirements. And what the Bush administration did was to pick that up quietly, continue it so as to ensure compensation for the families, and then go on to the issue that had been on the table since 1998, which was Gaddafi giving up his weapons of mass destruction.
Mr. Indyk, I want to ask you about Prime Minister Sharon's speech on Thursday offering the incentive of renewed negotiations toward a Palestinian state and that threat of unilateral action if those negotiations don't bear fruit. Do you see this as a positive development?
I think that it needs to be understood as a kind of carrot and stick offer by Prime Minister Sharon. Clearly, the ground underneath his feet of Israeli public opinion is shifting, and he understands that he needs to offer the Israelis more than just a military solution. What he is in fact trying to do is to engage Abu Ala, the Palestinian Prime Minister, in a negotiation that would lead to the implementation of something that Sharon has proposed for a long time, which is state with provisional borders, which is phase two of the roadmap. And what he's now introducing is both a greater willingness to be flexible, to negotiate, and to ease the situation of the Palestinians, at the same time as saying, if you don't get serious, then we'll act unilaterally and you'll get a worse deal. But I don't think he's really interested in a unilateral withdrawal. I think he's focused now, because of public pressure, on trying to work out a deal with Abu Ala.
Shibli Talhami, what is your take on Prime Minister Sharon's remarks?
I'm certainly less optimistic than Martin on that issue. The one positive, obviously, in the remarks is the fact that now there is a challenge, even within the right wing of Israeli politics, of the settlement issue. And I think that's important, and that will have impact in the discourse in the coming months and years. But I think the reality of it is, it sets in motion a set of circumstances that makes implementation of a unilateral plan more likely. I think if you look at the record so far, the building of the wall, the fence, the barrier, whatever you might want to call it, clearly that is part of a vision that Mr. Sharon may have. It's hard to know exactly what he has in mind, but here is what we know. What we know is the roadmap calls for a final settlement by the end of next year, including two viable states. The most optimistic interpretation of what Mr. Sharon wants sees him as only being willing to accept something much more interim. It's impossible to imagine. No one in the Israeli political mainstream, students of Sharon, thinks that Sharon is capable in the short term of accepting something along the line of what the Palestinians could live with. That leaves one with the interpretation of the ultimatum being, you know, unless you accept a lot less, we're going to implement a unilateral plan, and certainly the Palestinians are not going to accept a lot less. So that leaves you, with the conclusion that it sets in motion the implementation of a unilateral plan.
And Martin Indyk, very briefly, are you more optimistic than Shibli Talhami here?
Only marginally. I do think we will see in the next couple of weeks an engagement between the Israelis and the Palestinians. I think the reason for greater optimism is that both sides are now exhausted. The people on both sides are demanding a change. The Israeli political establishment is responding to that demand, but Hamas is as well, and that's why you see very little activity, terrorist activity on the Palestinian side. That provides a basis for them to the leadership to respond to this and to engage. And I think it's possible that if the United States, and this is, of course, a big if, gets off its high perch and starts to engage as well, it will be possible to move this process forward onto a political process.
I'm going to stop you now, Martin Indyk. Thank you. Shibli Talhami, thank you. It's 18 minutes past the hour.